Alexander Snitker, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. And Adrian Wiley, born-again anarchist and political has-been. Banter, blather, and joke about current events while attempting to figure out whether to keep trying to salvage our constitutional republic or just stock up on marshmallows to roast on the smoldering embers of society. It's time for Unattended Baggage.
Why, thank you, Scott. Hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host Unattended Baggage. Along with me is my radio life mate and the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Adrian Shoeless Wiley. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, man. I like the way you pantomimed kind of like in a... what's that game you play on Thanksgiving with your family? You know, sounds like three syllables.
I don't know.
Yeah. You were doing that to the intro. I thought that was rather entertaining.
Charades.
How can I not think of charades?
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe because you forgot to bring your shoes today.
I did not forget to bring my shoes. I actually brought shoes. I just, you know, choose not to wear them.
Oh, hold on. You actually did bring shoes with you?
Well, not shoes so much. They're slippers.
But... Okay, you brought flip-flops with you.
No. Actual furry on the inside slippers. Well, okay. I have a pair. They're kind of like moccasins, and they do have a hard rubber bottom. So, you know, they can kind of pass as shoes.
All right. Okay. All right. So this.
But I didn't wear them. I brought them just in case I had to go into somewhere.
So I walk outside. I find out Adrian's here. I walk outside. This guy gets out of the vehicle with no shoes on. Like no shoes. Shoes whatsoever.
Yeah. So what's the problem with that?
Look, you're two counties away from your shoes.
Yeah.
You're two counties away from your shoes. I'm
but
just saying.
It's Florida, dude.
That's true.
I mean, seriously. I grew up not wearing
I know Florida,
shoes.
Man.
You know, actually, I think I am regressing a little bit. It's kind of like full circle because I grew up until the time I was like got my first job. I don't think I ever wore, except to school, wore a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, throughout adulthood. In fact, I remember, you know, my dad say, hey, come on, let's go do this thing. And I'd get in the car and we'd get to where we're going and I'd get out of the car and he'd say, you don't have any shoes on. I'm like, well, yeah. He's like, well, then you can't go to where we're going. He's like, what the hell are you thinking, not wearing shoes? And then, you know, a decade or two later, I'm doing the same thing with my kids. It's like, you don't have any shoes on. Why don't you have any shoes on?
Yeah.
You know? And that was during the adult period of my life. I think I'm starting to get past the adult period of my life, which is a wonderful thing, by the way.
Yeah. No, I hear
kind of reverting back to childhood. But yeah, it's shoes are just unnecessary. You don't feel the same way? I mean, you don't go barefoot?
No, I don't go barefoot.
Really?
I don't ever go barefoot. Here's the thing. I'll walk outside at times around my house barefoot, but only at times, and I try to not do that for the most part. I always try to have at least flip-flops on.
Yeah, those are the worst invention in mankind.
What, flip-flops?
Oh, yeah, they're just horrible, horrible things. I've never worn them.
What, for a guy that doesn't wear shoes, why are you so negative on the flip-flops?
I don't like the feeling of that thing between my toes.
Okay. All right. I can hear you there. Just... Well, they make these slide things where they just do it over the entirety of the foot.
Yeah, but that's totally gay.
All right. There we go.
Just be barefoot. If you want to be that close to being barefoot, just be barefoot.
Just go all the way, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, shit, the soles of my feet are like dog's pads, man. I can walk on roofing nails.
Well, I like to have sensitive feet, so there you go.
You got a foot thing.
I don't really have a foot thing. No, I just don't want to have. I don't want to have the bottoms of my feet be all messed up.
Well, I tell you what, if you and specifically driving barefoot, you really get a more of a feel for the road. And I know you have that like little Fred Flintstone car out there that you don't actually need a feel for the road because you kind of just put your feet down and pedal. Basically, for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, Alex just got himself a smart car, one of those tiny little, kind of basically. Lawnmowers with a hard top.
Well, this actually has a soft top, so it's lawnmower with a soft top.
It's a soft top.
Yeah, literally, it's actually a convertible.
You could have got a John Deere and put a Bimini on it. You would have, you know, been about the same.
Yeah, no. I went
out. It is a convertible, though.
It is. It actually is a convertible. So I went out and bought a smart car, and we're going to actually wrap it. We're going to wrap it. Let me say this. We're going to wrap it with the new business that we're going to, that Danielle and Kelly are starting.
Right.
Which is called Another Girl Fights the Dust. And it's funny. A home cleaning business. And they're going to start this one up. And actually, I think starting next week, I think, is when they're really kind of, like, they already get the paperwork done. It's going to be four girls that are all getting together with it, and they're starting this thing called Another Girl Fights the Dust. We ran the numbers on it, and I got to tell you that the home cleaning industry is actually an industry that you can make a lot of money doing. But at any rate, so we went and got this car for it. The wrap is probably going to cost half of what the car cost.
Well, wait a second. You're obviously not going to use that as the vehicle for the cleaning business, because you can't get two humans and a can of Lemon Pledge in that car.
No, that's true. No, that's true. It's just going to be, well, we're going to use it for either going door to door, because we're going to market via going door to door.
Right.
And we're going to just drive it around, you know, the county. Like if we got to go to the store, back and forth to the store, or we got to drive around for whatever reason, we're going to try to use that vehicle as the one that you just kind of drive around in. And the thing about smart cars is that everybody looks at a smart car. Like when it goes by, it's one of those things that just averts your eyes' attention to the vehicle.
That is true.
And so what we thought is, let's get that one for a little tooling around car. And it gets like 65 gallons or miles a gallon anyway.
Well, honestly, it feels like riding a motorcycle.
Oh, it is.
It drives,
it's
like
fun.
Yeah,
you don't like it, but it's
fun.
I couldn't
quite figure it out. I wasn't sure if I wanted to shift or if I wanted to, you know, just get out and carry the thing home. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with it.
Yeah, no, I got you. But it was a lot of fun though. It was really it's a lot of fun for the vehicle, and it only had like 67,000 miles on it. And it'll last forever. And it does one of those like German engineering cars. Like Mercedes-Benz is the ones that make it. So you have to pay Mercedes-Benz oil change prices for it. But it'll last forever. It'll last like 400,000 miles. So this thing will last as long as we want to have it. And then we're going to wrap it up, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I imagine everything is packed really dense in there, because it's a transverse mount 3-cylinder, and it's a rear engine, and just imagine that is weird to work on. So you probably cost you a little more in repair bills than the average car, but you'll save so much on gas, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, it'll work. And well, they said it's actually pretty easy to work on. That's what they said. But I, again,
well, sure, you hold up the car with one hand and look up underneath, and you know, you can get to everything. It's nice.
So, and no hurricane damage at your house, I would imagine, correct?
No. But, you know, my heart sincerely goes out to the people of Alabama who were affected by this storm.
Yeah, those people in Alabama, boy, they got messed up.
Yeah. But, the hurricane passed us by. Man, Bahamas took a hit though.
Oh, they took a big
hit,
man.
That was terrifying. Seeing some of the video of those houses that were, you know, essentially their living rooms were 25 feet above sea level and they were flooding.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some scary stuff. But I'm actually shocked that the death toll so far has been so low. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, no, it is. But I think because, you know, it didn't take nearly, you gotta remember, those islands are not densely populated.
Right.
Like, right. They're populated when tourists are there, but there was no tourists there at the time. So, you know, it was a lot, I wouldn't say easier, but and again, nothing's easy, and hearts go out to these people. But like, because it's a tourist destination, it's not like you have a whole bunch of people that are getting in the way of things.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but there's still a fair amount of population there.
And
you know, there is very little high ground.
Oh, yeah.
Those islands are sandbars.
Well, and it probably changed the topography of the actual islands themselves now moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, like in our neck of the woods, we don't have a place called Hurricane Pass for, you know, just colorful colloquialism.
Yeah.
It was caused by a hurricane. So that does happen all the time. So, yeah I'm sure the landscape of those islands are forever changed.
And it sat over it. Like, it stalled there.
That was the amazing thing.
Now, the other thing is, the difference between this place and Puerto Rico, though, is going to be this. Puerto Rico was not a tourist destination. The islands that got hit here were tourist destinations. So that means that the cruise lines are bringing ships down there right now. They're donating millions of dollars to those areas. Like, they're going to get this thing fixed up in like within a year. Like, this place will be back to normal before the panhandle's back to normal.
Yeah, probably so. And well, not only that, a lot of investment money is pouring in there, because there's a lot of profiteering that's going to happen. People are going to go in there and, you know, buy up, you know, damaged properties and land and all that. Mm-hmm. So it's
and remake it,
which is, you know, I look at that from two different veins. I my first thought is, you know, screw you carpetbaggers, you know, that's just wrong type of profiteering. But, you know, also the end result of that is, you know, well, that's how things are done. That's how it will get repaired. That's how it will get improved. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that sort of things happens, but it will.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it is one of the greater features of the free market is that you have people go in there that will have a financial incentive to fix those places up.
Yeah, yeah, I concur.
And you got to have that financial incentive in order. Here's the thing, if you don't, you have Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, billions of dollars in debt and corruption going on left and right.
And yeah, our tax dollars flooding in there and, you know, with no ROI.
Yeah, with no ROI.
Right.
Just with a bunch of people that are now fleeing over to the mainland, you know, because they are American citizens.
Right.
But now people fleeing over to the mainland. Like, if it's too bad that Puerto Rico is not more of a tourist destination.
I don't know why it isn't.
It might be because of the corruption that's going on there now. I don't know.
It could be.
It could very well be.
Yeah.
But the other thing that happens with hurricanes is that sometimes things wash up on shore. And in South Florida, at a Florida beach, something very interesting washed onto shore. Cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah. A whole lot of it, apparently.
Yeah. If you're looking to get some of the white wizard, you know, there you go.
Wait, white wizard?
I just call him.
I was going to say, I've heard a lot of nicknames for cocaine, but I've never heard that one.
The white rabbit. That's what the white rabbit.
White rabbit.
White
yeah.
rabbit.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of cocaine, like thousands of dollars of cocaine that actually washed up on the shore in the Melbourne area. So
lucky bastards.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is if they've, you know that they're not going to actually get it when they talk about it on, like when it's a news article.
Right.
Like how many times does this happen?
Oh, yeah.
To where like somebody got it and it was like, oh, we're partying on Saturday night then.
Oh, yeah. That's what I wonder. I mean, what would you... You're walking down the beach, all right, and a package of 10 kilos of cocaine washes up on the beach. I don't know what the street value is, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Uncut, pure, Bolivian, whatever. The good stuff. Okay. Now, me personally, I'm not a fan of cocaine. Done a little bit back in the day, just not my thing.
Yeah.
I sure as shit would start making some discreet phone calls to people I know. I am not calling the cops.
Yeah, I'm not calling the cops at all.
I will find a way to offload that in a way where I profit from it.
Hold on. Let's just say, even if I was just gonna get rid of it, I'm still not giving it to the cops.
No. No.
Like I don't do coke. I still would there's no scenario in which, oh, you know what, we should talk to the police about this.
Right. Right.
Not gonna do that.
No, yeah. I'd rather
leave it there.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Before I would call the cops, I would just open it up and spread it out over the beach so it was completely harmless.
Yeah.
I would send it to the winds before I would do anything else.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a few hermit crabs get, real productive for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's about it.
That is it. I wouldn't do anything else other than that.
Yeah. I actually might try to see if I could offload the whole bundle to someone I know for, you know, a good price. I don't know if I know people like that anymore, though. There was a time when I knew people like that. I don't think I do anymore.
Yeah, I mean...
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head that would, you know, I could pick up the phone and call.
Yeah, I don't really... I don't think I... There's got to be somebody I know that...
There's got to be someone, yeah. But we... Between the two of us and all our contacts, there's got to be someone.
Somebody's dead. Somebody.
So if you're listening and you're a big-time coke dealer, give us a call. Let us know.
I want to update my records in case I ever find any.
In case we're walking down the beach and some cocaine washes ashore. Because as a great comedian once said, not comedian, but cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. I'm going to James, bitch. Try to marry me.
And I think, didn't one of our new and longtime favorite comedians do a really good parody of that one time?
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact.
I seem to recall that. Yeah, that kind of sticks in my head.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
So, and that, speaking of him, he just put out another special, by the way. So, in case people don't know this, is that Dave Chappelle put out another special on Netflix.
Right.
And the name of the special was called Sticks and Stones. And if you've ever watched any of Chappelle's stuff, you know that he is very unafraid. He will speak his mind, whatever it is. And there is no sacred cows in Dave Chappelle's world. I think that's a very safe thing to say right there. There is no, he will mess.
He's fearless. Yeah.
He will mess with any subject. It doesn't matter. No matter what it is, he will mess with it. And I think it's good. I mean, and he does it with everybody. And I think he's a hilarious comedian. He put out.
And to illustrate that point, if you haven't seen his stand-up routine, his latest one called Sticks and Stones.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. One of the funniest things and the most important things that I've seen in a very long time. But to kind of paraphrase how extreme he's willing to go, one of his lines was, well, I'm no pedophile, but if I were, Macaulay Culkin is getting fucked.
What? What?
So that's, and I honestly, I love that kind of comedy that is so extreme and so absurd and just so fearless, you know, no concern for political correctness. But the point I'm making is that's how far he was willing to take it.
Yeah, yeah. And he said the LGBTQ community is hijacking like 20% of the alphabet.
Right.
Like he went after the trans community.
That was
he went after white people. Like he went after white people. He went after the fentanyl problem in the white community. You know what I'm saying?
Where wait a second. Why did you say that like defensively?
No. What do you mean?
Well, you said it like, well, he went after white people.
Well, he went after everybody, though.
Well, yeah.
He doesn't. He's not just going at, again, he has no sacred cow.
Well, here's the thing. The left is lambasting him.
Oh, they're going after him big time.
They are going after him. Because,
he doesn't care.
Because he, you know, again, he bashed everyone. He made fun of everything, and including gays, lesbians, trans, white people, black people, Asians, you know, the audience.
Yeah, from the beginning, he went after the audience.
Right, right. And all of us, Americans.
Yeah.
But, you know, they hated it. They hated it because he didn't fit their mold of what a black person should talk about.
Yeah.
And that was really it. And the funny thing is the people who have it in their minds, how a person of color or whatever the latest phrase is for someone who is basically anyone other than white, how those people should specifically think, to me, that is the most racist thing in the world.
Yeah.
Well, because you're black, you have to think this way. Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, how about the one? Okay. How about the one part on there where he had to go to standards and practices?
And that was brilliant.
Yeah. And he was using the F word for faggot, right?
Right.
And so he was saying that word.
This is back when he had the Chappelle show. So, So he gets called into the headquarters, the standards and practices office of the network.
Mm-hmm.
And the network says, well, you can't say faggot. We're, you know, it's not. He says, well, it's, you know, it's funny. It's part of the joke. But I get it. I understand. I won't do it. But just out of curiosity, why is it that I can say nigger? You know?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, because you're black.
Well, no. What she said was, how come I can use the N word, but I can't use the F word?
Right.
How come I can do one and not the other? She said, well, you're not gay. You're not gay.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm not the N word.
He goes,
either.
I'm not a nigger either.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like, from my perspective, the person who says, well, you can say that because you're black, or you can't say that because you're white. To me, that's the most racist part of it.
Yeah.
The idea that you can only have specific thoughts, and you can't have specific thoughts, and you can only say specific words, or you can't say specific words based on the color of your skin, is the most demeaning thing, whether your intentions are positive and you're empathetic. And, well, you know, for past transgression, it doesn't matter why you think that way. The fact that you think that people can think a certain way or speak a certain way specifically because of the color of their skin is racist.
Yeah.
You know,
that in and of itself is racist.
Right. And Chappelle was pointing that out, and that is why the left is so pissed off at him.
Yeah.
He pointed that out. He pointed out that, you know, Americans want to just jump on people and go after them for their beliefs. If they ever say or do anything wrong, like comedians all the time are getting in trouble for pushing the envelope too far. And, you know, and he blames all of us for that. And to a certain degree, he's right.
Now there's something to that.
And the other thing the left hated is the setup for the gun issue.
Mm-hmm.
As he said, and I can't do it nearly as well as he led into it, but he led into it like, you know, that 2020 is an election year, and I can't tell you how important it is for all black people to go out and register to own a firearm. and I thought, Oh yeah. At that point, it was like, yeah, that now I understand why the left hates us so
much. Yeah, like I hate guns, but I own a couple of them.
Right.
And that's a good thing to have.
He said, yeah, that click click of a pump action shotgun will stop a rational person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but what happened is, and now in order to try to manipulate this, Rotten Tomatoes only allowed so many people on the critic side to actually weigh in. And at a certain point, Chappelle had a 0% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, hang on a second. I did not realize that Rotten Tomatoes actually limited the number of critics that could weigh in on that one.
Yeah.
Did they really?
Because
I thought they had a universe of critics. And if you were considered a legitimate critic by Rotten Tomatoes, your score counted.
I think in the beginning they weren't doing that. I mean,
really?
I don't know what the current Rotten Tomatoes score is on the Chappelle Show. Or
last check, it was 33 when I saw it.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was 33 positive when I saw it. But initially, I did see it when it was zero. So basically, and if you're not familiar with Rotten Tomatoes has two scores. It has a critic score and an audience score. Now, the audience score is where people who have seen the show or the movie or whatever can just weigh in and say, hey, here's what I thought of it. The critic score are, you know, people from the major publications and websites who basically do, criticize and review movies and shows and stuff for a living. So those are the two differences. Now, initially, it had a critic score of 0 for Chappelle's Sticks and Stones and an audience score of 100. How can you have such a dichotomy between the two? So you're pulling it up now. Where is it at now?
Sticks and Stones, 2019, Dave Chappelle. We're at 25% on the tomato meter. Total count of 12 people have been able to do it.
Okay.
And 99% in the audience score, with the number of people that have rated it, 26,189.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Look, I actually don't think that this was Dave's best one. Like, out of all the comedies that he's done, I don't think this is his best stand-up routine.
Really?
It was good. It was really good. I
laugh my ass off.
No. Yeah, but you laugh your ass off at all of them.
Yeah, that is true.
So I don't think it was his best one. I actually don't even think it was his best one on Netflix. I think the first one he did on Netflix, when he first came back, that one was better than this one. But this one was really good still. But if you're giving it a 25% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes as a critic, you should no longer be a critic, because you no longer have the ability of judging something based off of the merits of what it is.
Wait, why are you saying no longer?
Well, yeah, you never should have had it, I guess. I
mean, have you ever read, like, critics' materials?
Most of the time, critics suck anyway. No, a lot of these critics suck. I mean, it's just, well, and the critics' consensus, no consensus yet. You know what I mean? Like, but the audience score, 99. Like,
right.
It's hard to get higher than 99. Matter of fact, there's only one higher than 99. That's 100. You know what I mean? And for, this is why it sucks that the
Thanks
culture.
Thanks for the math lesson there, Alex. Because I'm sure our audience would have no idea what comes after 99.
Well.
Yeah, just did. I'm helping.
Well, and to give you an idea. So, okay, hold on. So Captain Marvel, the tomato meter on that one was 81% with a review counted of 289. And the audience score was only 35%.
Yeah, but that's because it's full out social agenda. It's full out leftist agenda, and that's because Captain Marvel was take a woman and stick her in a male role, and you know, God bless America.
It was an okay show. I actually did not mind the show too much, except for there was a couple parts in there where it's like, oh man, like are you really going to go down this agenda during a movie?
Right.
Like, don't ruin the Marvel universe because of this. And you know, we'll see what happens, but. But just to give you an idea, though, the number of people, 289, that the critics got to go on that one.
Right.
But in the Chappelle one, 8.
Yeah.
And that's current. Like, that's just now.
Right.
Like, that's just you're only ruining your own stuff by doing this.
Your own reputation. Yeah. People are starting to see through it. And, you know, that's the funny thing is the greater irony here is that that's exactly what Chappelle's show was about.
Yeah.
He was literally saying that if you don't say the right things, and if you go against the conventional wisdom on the social agendas, you will be attacked specifically by, you know, like the critics, for example, you know, and that's literally what's happening. So it was not only highly accurate, it was also prophetic because the same thing is happening to him now.
Yeah.
He's under attack for the things that he said, doing a comedy show that says if you say these things, you will be attacked.
Yeah, and he's not going to bow to the public.
No.
He's not going to bow to the pressure.
You're not going
to
see an apology tour from Dave Chappelle.
No, not at all.
And that's why I respect the man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, he made jokes about everybody, and that was okay. You can make jokes about everybody. People taking themselves way too seriously.
Well, I was pretty offended by the white people jokes.
Okay.
You know, I just he took it a little too far there.
No, he didn't.
Actually, yeah, I was a little disappointed that you know, come on, you got to
kind of light all things.
Yeah,
he lives in Ohio now. You know,
yeah, there's some fucked up white people in Ohio.
Like,
man.
He lives amongst the Ohioans. You know, he lives amongst the whites.
Have you met anyone from Ohio?
Well, somebody that did bow to the public pressure, though.
Who's that?
Is Walmart.
Oh, fucking Walmart, man.
Now here's the thing. So Walmart, and I'm sure people know this too. So Walmart last week decided that they're no longer going to sell some types of ammunition. They're not going to allow open carry in their stores anymore. And they're going to stop selling ammunitions for some handguns and some rifles. And they're going to stop allowing for open carry in their stores.
Well, it's their right.
It is their right. And I'm actually not even upset with the decision, by the way, because here's the thing. That means that you have to go to a local shop to buy your ammo.
Right. Right. But Walmart always had the better prices. Now, and again, let me publicly state, as I always publicly state, I do not own any firearms and I do not purchase ammunition. But I have noticed, you know, walking through Walmart to buy prophylactics, that they do carry ammunition, and it is very good prices. So it is very disappointing that Walmart will no longer, you know, sell ammunition. That's just sad.
Yeah, no, it is sad. And now here's the thing. So the company predicts that the market share in ammunition is only going to drop between 6% and 9% due to these changes.
What do you mean?
Like, they're only predicting that the market share that they have, because they're not getting rid of all ammunition. They're only getting rid of some ammunition. So it's going to drop between 6% and 9% of their market share of how much ammunition is sold in the country.
How is that possible?
What, they're only going to drop between 6% and 9%?
Yeah.
Because they're not getting rid of all ammo. They're only getting rid of some ammo.
Well, they're getting rid of all handgun ammo.
Not all handgun ammo, some handgun ammo.
Well, then that doesn't even make any sense.
Well, of course it doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't make any sense for them to stop doing it too, though.
So, wait a second. Well, I kind of have a different view of this entire situation.
Oh, no. All handguns and some rifles. Oh,
okay. All right. That's probably because it's going to definitely take a lot more than, you know, 6 to 9% of their market share.
Yeah.
Now, maybe what they were saying is that Walmart had 6 to 9% of the U.S. market share that's now going to be redistributed, essentially, to other suppliers.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to, like, people are still going to buy the ammo. They're just going to buy it from somewhere
else. They're going to buy it from somewhere else. Yeah.
Well, and look, and for all the people that hate Walmart, this is the funny part. A lot of people on the left hate Walmart because of what they've done to small businesses. You know what I mean? Because they've you know, basically
right.
put some other people out of business.
Sure.
But Walmart is getting ready to be put out of business from Amazon anyway.
That's true.
I mean, they're not really going to get put out of business. I mean, Walmart is fighting back, and they're going to do the online thing now.
They're definitely losing a lot of market share to Amazon.
They're definitely losing some market share to Amazon.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen is this is just going to move people away from buying from Walmart and buying from someone else. So at the end of the day, I'm not even that upset with the decision. And for people that say they're going to boycott Walmart, you shut up. Like, you're not going to boycott Walmart. And the reason why is because you're always going to go buy cheap stuff at the cheapest place, and Walmart's always going to have the cheapest prices on the other stuff that you're going to buy.
That is true.
Like, I dare you to buy from somebody else. Like,
right.
Here's the thing. Look, I am definitely a proponent of the legalization of marijuana. There is not a store that is probably doing more to stop that from happening than Publix. I am never stopping shopping from Publix.
Well, wait a second. Why do you shop at Publix?
Because shopping at Publix is always a pleasure. And Winn-Dixie sucks.
Winn-Dixie is awesome.
Winn-Dixie is horrible. I don't even like going into the store. I feel dirty in the store. I don't go in there. I'm only going to Publix.
They have better beef than anybody.
No, they don't.
Yeah,
I don't.
I listen to you. This guy knows his meat. My first job, as a matter of fact, when I was 13 years old, was in a butcher shop.
Was it really?
It was.
Chopping meat.
Working under and making sausage. If you want to, if you ever wonder how the sausage gets made, ask me. I'll tell you.
You
about
know
it.
How it gets made.
I know
it's
how it gets
nasty.
Made.
Pretty nasty.
Yeah, it didn't stop me from eating it, though. You know?
So, I mean, look, don't get me wrong.
No, the point is Winn-Dixie does have very good beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to see, look, and Walmart's allowed to do this, by the way. So I don't want to say that they're not allowed to do this, because they're totally allowed to do this. And people are looking at, well, this is a win for capitalism. Like, I mean, no, it's not really a win for capitalism, or it's a win for the fact that if you want to look at it as this company's able to make this decision, but they're going to deal with the ramifications of this, just like Dick's Sporting Goods did. They took a loss. These guys are going to take a loss for this, and you're not getting rid of the ammo anyway. Somebody, you're going to be able to buy it from somewhere else. So for right. people to look at this as a win, we'll see.
I don't see how it's a win for them.
Well, I think it's a win for the narrative.
Yeah, they're well within their rights to do it, and fine, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I just don't think it's a great idea in general. And it solves nothing.
Yeah, it solves no problem at all.
It's another one of those things that people can pat themselves on the back for and stroke each other's dicks for and say, we're helping, but it does absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Does absolutely nothing. In fact, you want to stop more shootings in your Walmart stores, let people open carry in them.
Well, yeah, and they got rid of open carry in all of their stores. So right. even in states that allow for open carry, you can't open carry in Walmart. I would say that Walmart, if there's another mass shooting in a Walmart, I got to say your new rule about not being able to open carry might have something to do with that.
Weren't there two recent instances where people went in to shoot up a Walmart and they were stopped by a person legally carrying a firearm?
Well, I only know about one, and the guy wasn't going in there to shoot it up. He was actually just open carrying, and people reacted to it. Like, he wasn't really trying to do... He was almost like an activist that was just trying to open carry in a Walmart. He just picked bad timing.
No, I think there was a...
There was another thing?
There was another thing.
I don't know
thing.
The other yeah. thing, then. I don't know yeah. the other thing.
So I don't have the details on it, so I could be talking completely out of my ass, which does happen at times.
It does.
But I could have swore I, caught a headline on that or something to that effect. I guess I should have paid more attention to it.
Yeah, you should have.
I probably should have.
And the other thing...
But the point is still valid, is that if you want to prevent mass shootings, the better way to do it is to allow people to be armed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the only thing that's going to help.
Yeah, yeah. And that will... If nothing, it may not prevent the shootings per se, but it will
limit
the number of casualties in the event of one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's only, that's proven. That is again, for people that want to claim science, that's a scientific fact.
Yeah, it truly is.
Yeah. And it's a lot. Like, it's a huge difference.
Yeah, it is.
You know? It's not going to be every time. I mean, everybody can point to one incident where, hey, there was somebody there and then still people died. But on average, the numbers go down tremendously.
You know what they can never point to? And I hear a lot of people on the left always saying this, is that a person carrying a legal firearm in that situation shot up a bunch of bystanders.
You never hear that
I've one. Never heard that one.
I've never heard of a bystander getting killed
by someone shooting back. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
By friendly fire. I've never even heard of it.
You never hear
of it. It's had to have happened.
It's had to have happened. I mean, when bullets start flying, all kinds of weird, bad things can happen. So I'm sure it has happened. But the point is that it's so rare that we can't even think of an instance.
And you would think the left would highlight that whole argument.
Yeah. If it was happening all the time,
you'd see them point to it instead of just you using it in the abstract.
Yeah, it is a very big abstract argument for the anti-gun crowd is that, oh, well, if you have a bunch of people shooting with guns, they're going to just kill everybody. It's like... that just doesn't happen.
Well, and this gets into the argument of, well, a company is legally allowed to do this. Whether it's the right move or not is a different question than if they're allowed to do this. And that's why the lawsuit that YouTube has against it right now about them, banning the PragerU videos is also where I just don't think they hold any merit.
Yeah, and you would think PragerU would get that.
They just, this is the problem that we're running into right now is that things like YouTube are looked at as the utilities. Like they are in the public space now, so they have to govern themselves by a different set of rules.
Well, there is some truth to that. And it's funny because you will have people who argue for regulation of certain businesses to prevent monopolies who can point to some of these things as being monopolies. And, there's a little bit of truth to that. But what you also have to remember is that on the back end, a lot of the things that allows these companies to get so big and to buy up all their competitors has a lot to do with government. And
yeah.
Because, Facebook, take them out of the equation. Facebook, they actually pretty much monopolized it on their own. But they're not truly a monopoly because there's still Twitter, there's still Instagram, there's
MeWe,
still yeah, there's a whole bunch of other
Minds.
Things, right? That are out there that are competing with it. So there are other available platforms. Now, Google and Amazon are a little bit different story because they are actually making huge amounts of money from the government. And that has to do with their cloud computing, their storage, their, you know, internal search functionalities, their AI. So they are, those are getting to a point where there's so much interaction with government that they almost are a partially governmental agency. And they definitely are in data collection. And that is something we're going to talk about a lot more in the second hour. But I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. So Prager does have a little bit of an argument, but I think for the most part, no. YouTube at this point is still a private entity owned by Alphabet, of course, Google. And they still at this point have the right to restrict whatever speech they deem inappropriate. Now, it sucks, and I hate it. And fuck you, Google. But, you know, there's no reason that they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on this one. I don't like it. But here's the thing. What I hope is come out with a platform that's truly free speech. Mm-hmm. Like, come out with a platform that you can really say whatever you want to say on it.
Build a better mousetrap.
That's right. Build the better mousetrap and people will use it. I haven't seen anybody even really attempt to build a better mousetrap for YouTube that competes with YouTube.
It'll come along. I mean, remember when
like DTube and you got Vimeo, but that's not very good either, though.
Well, yeah, it's getting there.
I'm just surprised. I'm surprised you're not seeing one that's getting bigger now.
Well, here's the thing. There was a time when AOL was the internet.
That's true.
You know, there was a time when MySpace was social media.
Well, and when you have government intervention at some of these points, I think what it does is that when you get the government intervention, though, it makes it almost impossible to take these people out. Like,
well,
what if MySpace was able to lobby legislation when MySpace was big to almost make it so MySpace was the only thing that was good? Then there would be no Facebook.
Well, that's exactly what Google and Amazon are doing right now.
That's right.
But they're not doing it through. They don't want direct regulation of their business, but they're doing it through the back end stuff. You know, they're doing multi-billion dollar contracts with the government that are keeping them in a position where they can, when a startup does come along that is potentially a threat to them, they just buy it.
Yeah.
That's kind of where they're at. But if their profits were solely private, they probably wouldn't have the resources to do as much of that as they're currently doing. Because true monopolies in a free market system never last long. They pop up from time to time, but they do not last because they cannot last.
Yeah. No, that's true. No, that's absolutely true.
Even if it's just a black market that defeats them.
Yeah. And this stuff with technology and the tech companies merging really a lot with government in many ways is getting that we're starting to now see the next steps of this. When it comes to social credit scores. I mean, look, this was only a China thing.
Right.
And now it looks like the Trump administration is actually considering using the social credit score in order to see who can determine who can buy a gun or not.
Yeah. Well, this is something that it's been coming for a long time, and it's coming, folks. There's no stopping it. The genie is out of the bottle, and unless we have a complete reversal of technology, which I do not see happening, this is going to be coming for us. It's a perfect storm of technology and willingness of government to use it and the corporate collusion allowing them to do so.
Yeah.
Those are the three factors. And obviously in China, it was much more of a no-brainer because they have a single-party communist system.
If the totalitarian regime.
Yeah, if the government says it, the private sector does it, and the people have no choice but to comply. In fact, I was watching a video on from the French news service on the social credit score in China, and they were interviewing people, and the people were saying, well, I think it's a good idea because we must have laws, and this will keep society together, and you could just see the strain in their face. And there was one woman who said, well, we have no choice anyway. So, and you could see on her face that when she said it, she kind of realized what she said and snapped back. But I support it completely. And that's what you're going to have. A lot of people have compared this to, if you've ever seen the series Black Mirror, there was an episode called Nosedive. And it was a very similar concept to this, where people ranked each other. And it was like, you know, giving likes to everything a person does. And if your score drops low enough, you can't live in certain places and you can't travel to certain places and you can't get the best services and so on and so forth. Well, that literally, that's exactly what happens in China. But it's coming here now. And one of the companies on the front edge of this is a very shady company, by the way, almost a kind of like a blackmail company, if you will, called MyLife. And yeah. MyLife has a social credit score between 1 and 5 on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's based on a variety of factors, including the opinions you have and the views you have and the things that you say on social media, and, you know, and it's going to continue to spread. Now you've got President Trump. Once again, I don't know how you conservatives, quote unquote conservatives, ever supported this guy. President Trump saying that he likes the idea of a social credit score to determining who can or cannot buy guns.
Yeah. It's scary stuff.
Yeah. And it's the thing is, it's going that direction. It is going to happen unless some dramatic event prevents it from happening, because the technology has already gone too far. The technology, everything you do and say and is recorded and cataloged and fed through algorithms and determined by, you know, AI to classify you. It's gone so far that they can figure out what you're thinking. I mean, how many times have you been thinking of something and an ad popped up that was exactly what you were thinking about?
Like, they're considering using Amazon Echo and Apple Watch to determine if citizens own a gun by listening to what you're saying.
Yes, and we already know that they are listening to it.
Yeah,
they're recording all of it. They're recording all of it. And God, I get so frustrated because I've been telling you people this for 10 years now, that this is happening. And now, back then, I was tinfoil hat. You know, back then, I was a crazy conspiracy theorist. Now, today, it's like people are like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you were right, but we don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing to me. And they're kind of at the position now, well, government's not going to do that. Well, you said that 10 years ago about them recording you in the first place. Well, now they are. Now they've admitted it. And now the government is saying, yeah, we want that data so we can put it into, you know, a system of ranking people into whether or not they should have their God-given rights or not.
Yeah. And now they're demanding from Apple and Google they hand over the names of 10,000 plus users of a GunScope app. So these are just 10,000 people that were using the app, app for a GunScope. And now they're asking to get all this information from them. So you signed up to get this. You didn't do anything wrong. It's legally allowed to use a scope. You're legally allowed to use a scope. But now they're coming after you.
Well, it's if you buy a certain type of scope, I forget the brand name of the scope, but there's an app that you can download and it helps you, you know, align the scope, and you can use it actually as an extension of
Obsidian 4,
what the scope is seeing and so on and so forth. Now, apparently this technology has been, or these scopes are not allowed for export,
mm-hmm.
but some of them ended up being exported. So guess which department it is that, you know, you Republicans and Trump supporters' favorite branch of the Department of Homeland Security, ICE.
Yeah.
ICE is the one asking for the data on all the people who downloaded this app, because they're the ones who are going after it. So you've got your President Trump and your beloved ICE catching all those brown people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got to stop the brown people. They're the ones actually who put your name on a list because you downloaded an app for the scope on your AR-15.
Yeah.
Or whatever rifle, Remington 700, whatever it was. You know, and these are the people that are going to be enforcing the social credit score based on your posts on social media as to whether or not you can buy your next gun.
Yeah. So, and what they're doing is, and again, if you ever want to do something that you want to violate everybody's constitutional rights, you're going to claim that it's either terrorists or whatever. They're claiming that the Taliban's using it. Like, come on, really? Like, you're willing to, the terrorists have friggin' won at this point.
Oh, totally.
Like, and again, this is just another thing where they're just grabbing more information. Why do they need 10,000 of them? You know what I mean? Like, why do they need all of them? They need all of them because they want another data point on every citizen in this country.
Right, right. See, that's the difference. And that's what technology and the collusion with companies like Amazon and Google and Apple and Microsoft and so on and Facebook, that is what the government collusion has allowed them to do. It allows them to bypass the Fourth Amendment completely because the government, if they wanted this information, they would have to have a specific name of a specific person they wanted to investigate, create a warrant, go to a judge and say, hey, we believe this guy did this. We want to search his computer records. We want to see if he has this app on his phone, so on and so forth. Okay. When you sign up for a service and you clicked accept on that EULA, end user license agreement, terms and conditions, privacy policy, blah, 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 what you're actually doing is you are giving those corporations an end around to the federal government, because somewhere buried in that user license agreement or in those terms and conditions or in that privacy policy is a clause that they can hand over that information if asked to by law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And so when law enforcement actually asks them to hand over that information, you have already waived your Fourth Amendment right through the privacy policy. Now, that to me is a good argument for why YouTube and Google should not necessarily be considered having the right to license speech. You know what I'm saying? To control speech.
Yeah, I got you. Because, no, I understand that argument.
Yeah, because if that's the fact, then they should say under no circumstances will we cooperate without a specific warrant for a specific individual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they were doing both those things, that would be fine. But they're not. They're cherry picking from, you know,
the worst on each side.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which sucks.
Right.
Now, not all bad news, by the way. So there is one thing of good news is that we found out now that the terror watch list actually is unconstitutional and it violates constitutional rights. So the government watch list, more than 1 million people are identified as known or suspected terrorists, violates the constitutional rights of those placed on it. A federal judge actually ruled on Wednesday about this. So District Judge Anthony Trega grants summary judgment to nearly 24 Muslim U.S. citizens who had challenged the watch list, in which with the help of a Muslim civil rights group, the Council of CARE basically had basically, which I'm not really a fan of CARE either way, but the fact is that the Constitution is the Constitution and you can't violate the rights of people by just putting them on a list.
Right.
You can't do that.
Well, I have a feeling that this is going to be overturned in appeals. I don't think this precedent is going to last very long. I'm sure there will be all kinds of injunctions placed on it and, you know, it appeals and this will be dragged out forever. And eventually they will go back. They will continue using terror watch lists. That is a promise.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure.
Even though it is the court got it right. It is completely unconstitutional, but it's not going to matter. This judge's ruling is not going to matter. It's not going to hold up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. But it's a good, here's the thing. It's a good, you got to take the good with the bad. And so that part was actually, I think, kind of pretty good.
You know, no, actually it's sad because this is the kind of thing that we hang on to. This is like our fingernails dug in to the last shred of our, you know, constitutional rights. The fact that, you know, all of us should be saying collectively that, of course, a terror watch list is unconstitutional. Of course, telling someone without any due process that we suspect you of something, so we're going to take away your right to travel or your right to do anything. Of course, that is unconstitutional. That should be a clear as day to everyone. But instead, we have this one standalone judge somewhere that's going to get overturned by an appellate court with a 3-judge panel, or even if it goes to the Supreme Court, they'll eventually just overrule it because it no longer matters. Your rights no longer matter. And I'm telling you, folks, technology is the driver here.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse. And if we, and again, it's a three-headed beast. And the three heads are the technology itself, the government, and the collusion with corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three things that are driving it. And unless you take, you can kill the beast by taking out any one of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then again, because the pendulum swings back to the left and to the right, is that in the 2020 election cycle, the Democrats are looking to come and take your guns. And look, we've used to say this. Like, I remember we've said
Trump
this before.
Trump switched to a Democrat now?
Well, no, I'm sorry. Both of them. I'm sorry. Both of them are taking your guns.
It seems like Trump is the one trying to take our guns.
Well, but the difference is, though, is that now that he's setting all these rules in place, now the next people that are going to come in is going to make it even easier for him to do it. So one side does it, then the next side ups the game, then the next side ups the game. It's like a contest to hold my beer. Let me see what I can do more. So Bader O'Rourke is, you know, he's running for president over.
Did
in
you
the
just
Democrats.
Call him Beta?
Beta. Yeah, Beta O'Rourke. I don't care. Dork O'Rourke. I don't like this guy. I actually think he's a loser, but at any rate.
Wait, is he a cock?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't use that term.
It's Beto.
Oh, Beto?
Yeah, not Beta.
Oh, well, I'm going to call him Beta O'Rourke. So this is what he said on the campaign trail. He goes, I want to be really clear that that's... Okay, so somebody asked him if about... that would address the fears of some Americans that the government would take away their assault weapons. So... He was asked basically about in Charlottesville, Virginia, how would he address the fears of some Americans that the government would take away their assault weapons? And this is what he said. I want to make sure I get the quote right. I want to be really clear that that's exactly what we are going to do. Americans who owns AR-15s, AK-47s will have to sell them to the government. We're not going to allow them to stay on our streets, to show up in our communities, to be used against us in our synagogues, our churches, our mosques, or Walmarts, or public places. All countries have video games. All countries have struggled with mental health. All countries deal with hatred. But only America has more guns than human beings, 390 million firearms in a country of 329 million people, which kill nearly 40,000 people a year. That's why, as president, I would institute a mandatory buyback of every assault weapon in America. Wow. Now, before we get into the Meghan McCain part, I want to make sure that we get the facts of this out of the way. Or not out of the way, but I want to talk about the facts of this. Because you ran some numbers.
I did. And, you know, actually, let me pull those numbers up. I did a very conservative, estimation of, first of all, the first thing you have to know is how many guns are in this country. And basically, there's more guns than there are people.
It's like 390 to 324.
Yeah, it's something in that range. But let's say, you know, only 60% of Americans own those rifles. So we're still talking about being in the homes of roughly, you know, 180,000. Or 180 million.
180 million people.
Yeah. 180 million people own guns. And some of them are the same homes. But if when you start to work down the numbers, what you find is they would have to, even if there was 90% compliance, even if 90% of the people who own guns, who owned assault rifles, who own these type of weapons that people, you know, Beta Cuck O'Rourke is. I just had to say that. Talking about confiscating. 90% compliance, you would still have...
Which you'd never have, by the way.
Right. You'd still have roughly 8 million guns that you would have to go out and get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who are they going to send? Well, they're going to send cops,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, on average... And how are they going to come? Are they just going to come politely, knock on the door and say, excuse me, sir?
They're coming SWAT.
Right, they're coming SWAT.
With risk protection order, risk confiscation order.
High-risk warrant. Yeah, they're coming with high-risk warrants. Okay. Now, so 8 million, they've got 8 million houses to do this at.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And that's on the unrealistically low number.
Yeah. That's if, you know, like if you historically take the numbers from like Australia and New Zealand and the UK and how confiscations have worked over the years,
mm-hmm.
those are crazy high pie in the sky compliance rates.
Yeah.
But even let's say that for the best case scenario. So we're talking, you know, 8 million homes that need to be raided, essentially. So how do you do that? Well, you send out cops with a whole lot of guns and doing a high risk warrant, you know, maybe no knock, maybe kicking in doors. Well, what happens when you do that? Well, people die. Cops die. Civilians die. Kids die. You know, here's the thing. They wouldn't have enough people to do it. I mean, right now in the U.S., they only serve 20,000 high-risk warrants per year. 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to serve 8 million? They'd need an army. I mean, literally, they'd have to enlist the army, and that still wouldn't be enough. Maybe if they enlisted the entire U.S. Army, all the armed forces, to go door to door, knocking on doors, maybe they could do multiply it by five. Maybe they could do five times as many high-risk warrant searches, 100,000 a year. It would still take them 80 years to confiscate all the guns. Now, and if you take the numbers of how many people die in these raids, you're talking the death of thousands of civilians, thousands of law enforcement officers, thousands of children. So every time people start talking about gun confiscation, first of all, the one thing that if you're pro-gun, it's never going to happen unless we have a literal complete civil war.
Yeah.
There's no way. I don't think that's even plausible. I don't think there's any way that gun confiscation can ever fully happen in the U.S. It just can't. That genie is so far out of the bottle, it's impossible. So when O'Rourke says these things, know that he's full of crap. But what they can do is they can do the kind of thing that Trump is talking about, and that is using your social media scores, using your, red flag attributes that they love without due process to determine whether you can buy a gun,
mm-hmm.
buy ammunition, download an app, go to the range. That's what they can do. And that's what they probably will do unless, we do something about it.
Well, yeah. And so, but in response to what Beto O'Rourke said, which he doesn't even understand the number of deaths that are involved there, how many people actually die because of his actions, that the number of people that will die are way higher. I don't know if you had that number.
Well, I do have the numbers here. Based on my extremely, extremely optimistic projections, it would result in the death of 1,440 police officers, 7,600 civilian adults, and 1,500 children. And it would also result in roughly 150,000 severe injuries to both police and civilians.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's more than they are dying now.
That's more people than in 9/11.
And the other thing is this, like when they talk about gun deaths, like when they use the stat for gun deaths, like a lot of those deaths are actually suicides. It's not even like you were murdered with a gun. Half of those numbers are somebody just decided to kill themselves,
right?
Which if you want to kill yourself, there's more than one way to do it. Like if you get rid of guns, then people will jump off of bridges or drive their car into oncoming traffic and kill more people, like, and kill other people. Like they'll find other ways to off themselves. So you're not going to fix the problem that way. And how many people are going to die?
Well, wait a second. Bernie Sanders might have a solution for fixing that problem.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that in the second hour, though. We'll get into that in the second hour, Mr. Eugenics. Always love the guys that are supporting the eugenics. So Meghan McCain, who basically said something that was true, says that if Beto O'Rourke's plan went through, there would be a lot of violence. She says it on there. Like, if this would happen, there'd be lots of violence. I'm not giving up my weapons. And even Meghan McCain, who is, GOP establishment, whatever you want to call her, is still, when she's on The View on national TV, like, I'm not giving up my weapons, and was unafraid of saying it. And what was the response to her true statement is that Beto O'Rourke then is attacking her for, how dare you say something that's true? Like, you're giving people permission to be violent. No, she's saying something that's true, you dumbass. Like, you ignorant piece of shit.
So in his mind, that the American people are sitting around waiting for Meghan McCain to...
Give them permission.
Give them permission to react when he comes to take their guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you say something that's true, that if you try to do this, it will cause violence... You're the one that's the problem, not the gun grabber. Like, here's the thing. If Beto said, I'm dropping out of the presidency right now, and I'm going to sign up to be a police person, and I'll be the first one to go through the door when the confiscations start, I might actually have a little bit of respect for it. But you're going to get a bunch of cops killed One, because you don't care who you get killed in your socialist utopias that you're trying to build. Because Chairman Mao, the only problem with Chairman Mao, I guess, was that he was doing it over here, over there, instead of doing it over here. Like, you bunch of commie bastards.
You know,
like, go ahead.
I wonder if they actually believe that, or they just don't think it through.
They don't care.
Part of me thinks that people like him they're just not thinking it through. And they're just thinking, well, there's a law, so it will magically happen this way. Oh, and part of me thinks that maybe they're going, yeah, we need to kill all these people that think differently than we do.
Oh, they do. No, they absolutely do. They have no caring whatsoever. Look at the thing.
I think some of them are just dumb.
Maybe some of them are. Some of them are dumb. Bernie's not one of them, though, that's dumb. Bernie does not. Bernie doesn't care. He definitely doesn't care about if people are going to die, as long as he gets his socialist utopia.
That is true. Yeah.
Like, and again, it's one of these things of like if you look at this buyback thing, like, O'Rourke doesn't care about the people that want to keep their weapons. He just wants them to die. And it's the difference between people that like believe in a libertarian philosophy versus people that believe in a socialist philosophy, or a collectivism versus individualism.
Versus.
Versus.
You never got that right.
One versus the other. In what we would see in a free society, if people wanted to get together and form a commune,
right,
they can totally do it.
Right.
Like, if you want your socialist utopia, as long as you're not forcing anybody else to live under that way, go and do it all you want to.
Yeah. I love communism. I think communism is great, as long as somebody else is doing it and they're not forcing me to.
Exactly.
You don't stay off my lawn. Don't take my shit. You have communism all you want. I don't care.
You can do whatever you want to, as long as it's the threat of violence. And that's why, like, right, the moral high ground that these guys stand on is it's such a bunch of crap.
It is. Because it totally is. Because it's all based on force.
It starts with force.
It has to. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to. Even with like Buttigieg or whatever that dumbass's name is too. Like, Buttigieg came out during, because they had and we'll get to the 7-hour climate change thing either too for next hour. But what he said was along the lines of like, well, you know, if Jesus wanted you to feed the homeless, you know, feed the sick and, you know, take care of your fellow man. Like, he didn't say he wanted Caesar to do it, though. Like, he didn't want the government to do it. He said you as an individual should do it.
Right.
Like, the fact that you want to conflate the two is the problem.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And it takes you out of having to have the responsibility of doing it yourself.
Yep.
Which is why places like San Francisco that are supposed to be these, you know, bastions of liberalism.
Oh, yeah. Save it.
Yep, I'm sorry. All right. Sorry.
All right, well, that's hour number one, folks. We appreciate you listening. If you'd like to hear hour number two, unfortunately, we are capitalists, and we put that behind a paywall. But the good news is, here's the great news for you. Only costs you $2 a month.
It could, as little as $5 a month.
Oh,
$2 a month doesn't get you on the paywall.
Yeah, but what is $5?
Exactly. It's a cup of coffee.
Shit. That's,
for a cup of coffee a day.
That's what you find in your sock.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do want to thank some people for this week for signing up, by the way. So,
that's right. Who are our new members?
In the conspicuous duffel bag level, we got Lee Raska and Thomas Allen. And the curbside switcheroo level, Carol Rubido. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. And if you would like to go there, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/unattendedbaggage is the site that you would go to in order to see this.
See, those are the folks that are going to be here in hour number two, but you freeloaders, you're out in the cold. So pony up a little cash. Come see us in hour number two.
All right. See you next on the other side of the wall.